the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome once again to another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm Len, and I'm going to be hosting this one again solo. Joey is off this evening. So, Joey, wherever you are, hope you're having a wonderful time and you're recuperating, because once you're back, actually, he's not back for another week. He's not off on Monday. This might be breaking news to anybody out there. Joey will not be accompanying me on Monday's show. I'll be doing that with somebody else. It'll be a surprise. Anyways, before we go into our interview with Ryan, the Nuclear Bitcoiner, just want to read off a couple of things here, because we have two sponsors for this show. Number one, we have EasyDNS. Of course, it's a great place, the best place to get any type of action with respect to web hosting, email hosting. For example, if you have your email with Gmail and you want to migrate it over to a new platform, the EasyDNS platform, you could do it so you don't lose your email in the process. Web hosting, of course, I mentioned they're really good for that. Anycast DNS, domain name registration. There's no better place to do that. You could get your virtual private servers over there. Also, NIPO5, if you want to get quote-unquote verified on Noster, they're able to do it for you and help you out. So they got migration services, as I mentioned. It's fast, it's private, and it's fast, reliable, and there's privacy-focused here. And you could pay with Bitcoin, but you know what? Give them your dirty fiat. Or give them your Bitcoin. Well, either way it works. But whenever you do, if you go over to them, please let them know that we sent you. And we do have a second sponsor, which is the Mighty Bull Bitcoin. And you can live on the Bitcoin standard with Bull Bitcoin. So you could pay your bills. You could buy gift cards. So you go shopping out there with those cards. So you could spend your Bitcoin and convert it into gift cards. Buy Bitcoin, also KYC free. Did I mention that? Use Canada Post. What a great way to do it. There's a video I did that on how to do it. Anyways, you could sell your Bitcoin, but who wants to sell? You could buy Lightning. You could buy even Liquid. So you have this side chain, you have Liquid, and you have on-chain that you could buy. And they have an app coming out in not too distant future. Available right now on Android through the APK. You have to sideload it, but it will soon be available on the Play Store and the App Store respectively. But use our promo code below. By doing that and signing up and funding your account, you're going to get $21, 21 added to your account. So check it out, use our code, and you are golden. But with that, I want to bring in Ryan, the Nuclear Bitcoiner, onto the show. Ryan, buddy, I was just speaking to you a few minutes ago on our other interview. Thank you for hopping on. How are you, brother?
Awesome. Yeah, it's great seeing you again. It feels like it's only been, what, like 3 weeks since we saw each other in person at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, I've only met you, I think, twice in person. Once at that, I forget what it's called, Safari Bar and Grill in Toronto. I met you and your wife
there. That is correct. We popped into a meetup.
And then I also met you, and was your wife there at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference as well?
Absolutely, yes.
So I think that's the only two times I met you, and it's always a pleasure to do so. The last time I had to give you a great big hug, because you're doing a wonderful job for Bitcoiners. You're recently in Minnesota doing well. You know what, I don't want to talk much about this. Ryan, tell us what's going on, man, because there's a lot going on in the world of nuclear and how it might cross over with Bitcoin. But you know what, the floor is yours. I'm gonna let you talk about this and we'll dive deep into this whole topic here.
Yeah, nuclear power is a hot topic right now, especially in Canada. Ontario just had a few big announcements about adding some large nuclear capacity, as well as expanding the amount of deliverables that they were promising on small modular reactors at the Darlington site. They were only initially intending to build one demonstration unit, but now they're going to build a set of four. And that is also in collaboration with future units that are going to be built in Alberta and Saskatchewan using this exact same model of reactor. That's the GE Hitachi's boiled, like scaled down boiled water reactor version of their mass produced large reactor that's built in several places throughout the world. And then on top of that, there's, so then the Bruce project, that's the one I wanted to get to next, was they're planning on building 5 gigawatts worth of capacity at the Bruce C reactor, which is a huge development because Ontario and Canada in general had not really shown any indication that they were interested in building large nuclear power in the recent past. They had shown a lot of interest with small modular reactors going along with the small modular reaction plan, or small, yeah, the SMR action plan that has a number of companies approaching Canada to get their first of a kind reactors licensed and demonstrated using our existing nuclear power infrastructure and our regulatory system, and then potentially put these reactors into mass production. So there's been a lot of focus on the SMRs. So this big announcement for Bruce building a large capacity of nuclear power is a very surprising and welcome development for everybody that's paying attention to the energy security space right now these days, with seeing a lot of places around the world with precarious situations where there's blackouts and power unreliability issues where there typically hasn't been in the past. And many people will find different pieces that can be contributing to who's to blame for this unreliability. But one thing is for sure, if we want to minimize unreliability, nuclear power is going to have to play a absolutely significant role in the future of our energy systems. So finding myself in this niche talking about nuclear power to the Bitcoin audience has been a very rewarding experience, and it's taken me to various places around the world already, El Salvador, Japan, and then I was at the Canadian Bitcoin Conference just last weekend, where the nuclear topic was very well received amongst many other presentations that were on very compelling topics. There was like Francis Puglio announcing the newest iteration of the Bull Bitcoin, which was really awesome. The new application that's going to make an exchange that's also a wallet and do all kinds of other cool stuff, and a bunch of other great presentations that were there. I liked Luke Broyles also had a good presentation about CBDCs, and the one with the guy that Joey's talking with about the long wave theory. I managed to sit in on that presentation, and there's definitely some interesting patterns that are converging and cycles that are coming together that have played out through many decades and centuries that humanity has experienced. And we seem to be in the midst of an interesting turning point that he has his finger on a good perspective of how to view how things are going to go in the not too distant future, and to prepare accordingly, and be expecting that things are definitely going to come out the other side in a much better way, but it's going to be a wild and turbulent ride before we get there.
Nuclear has received a lot of negative publicity in the past little while, and I wonder if that, I mean, I know for sure that's a reason why that there's not been much expansion in Canada with respect to that. But you've mentioned there are SMRs that are coming online. But with respect to this one, this Bruce project, that's the 5 gigawatts of capacity they're putting online, is that the biggest nuclear plant that has been built in Canada for a number of years? When was the last time something like that, like this, was even announced?
It will have been since the 90s when the first reactors were finished. The first large sets were, the Pickering was originally built back in the early 70s, and then Darlington and Bruce through the 80s and 90s. So yeah, Canada hasn't built a large nuclear project in decades. We've been refurbishing our fleet and giving it the life extension upgrades that it requires to continue operating it for another 40, 50 years before it needs to be reassessed again. But this is the first announcement of pursuing large nuclear reactors in Canada in quite some time. And aside from the Vogtle reactor in Georgia and the Hinkley reactor in the UK and one other in Norway, there hasn't been many large reactor projects completed in the West in several decades. Like, there was another one in Belarus like 15 years ago or so. So it is refreshing to see nuclear power finally gaining momentum and kind of making it clear that we're going to need it in the near future by all of the rhetoric that's going on with power security these days.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you saw there was a interesting story that came out, and it's kind of, I'm going off the path here a little bit, but it was a story about in Eastern Canada, and I forget which province it was, but they set up some windmills over there. And I believe less than, and that was over 10 years ago, and less than half are still in operation today, because the longevity of that is just nowhere near what initially was planned. So it goes to show you that all this quote green energy that they wanted, the renewable energy that they want to employ, it just doesn't work for long-term solutions. And nuclear is something that is tried, tested, and proven that it's easy and reliable and cheap to use. Now, with that being said, you mentioned that the one in Pickering, because I want to start very local here, at least local to the greater Toronto area. So the Pickering plant was set up, it was established in the 70s. What is the lifespan of something like that?
As far as I know, we can keep these reactors operational indefinitely. Like, some of them have bespoke parts that can't be replaced, so they will need to have like full replacement of like a lot of components. But with the refurbishment operations that are going now, these reactors are having their, like, all of the critical components are being replaced, and that will give them at least another 40 years. And many of them, yeah, have already been in operation for roughly 40, 50 years. So, like, we're talking 80, 90, almost 100 years of life we can get out of these reactors if they're well-maintained and well-operated. So, and we're hopeful that the next generation of nuclear reactors that we build, we can get even more out of. Like, the licensing terms are merely like an arbitrary number that's chosen for the many years ago, because when we started building nuclear reactors, we did not anticipate how long we could keep them operational. So as we have more evidence of how long they can stay operational, we can continue to prolong their life and take various measures to improve their capacity factors, to improve their output, because that is one thing that's happened with some of the refurbishments that have happened. The output of these reactors had actually gone up by several percent, so now they are actually providing more electricity than they were prior to being shut down for refurbishment. So that's a welcome benefit that we're getting out of these things. And yeah, these are very like long, like low time preference projects. Like, yes, they take some time to get them operational, and there is lots of licensing and regulation and engineering that goes into building a nuclear reactor, and a lot of capital investment. And like with the new fleet of reactors, we're going to be building factories to build smaller reactors. So there's a lot of capital investment that goes into building large mega factories like this, but the output is going to be like a rapid deployment of smaller nuclear reactors that can be applied to a much broader range of applications than we're typically familiar with the large reactor fleet. And as far as we know, they're good for at least a few decades, minimum like 40 years. Some of them will be able to have like long fueling cycles, so they won't even need to be refueled for as much as a decade. It depends on the coolant type and the like the fuel types. There's a range of different configurations that are being proposed with this new generation of reactors. So it is going to be an interesting challenge for the regulation bodies to adapt new policy and licensing procedures to align with the fact that we're going to be building a lot more reactors than just the big boiled water reactors that we're familiar with around the world.
So as these, let's look at the Pickering one, maybe Darlington, and even the SMRs that you were just mentioning, and you know, the lifespan is not indefinite. If sooner or later they would have to be closed. I know it's going to be decades in the future, maybe even longer, but ultimately they will have to be mothballed. And when it comes time for that, what is the process to decommission one of these, either one of these established large nuclear power plants like the one in Pickering, or these SMRs? Do they simply just build a sarcophagus the same way that they did in Chernobyl, or is there something else? I'm not certain you can just simply demolish and go from there. I'd love to know, what is the process for decommissioning and closing off a plant?
Well, from what I understand, if it's done properly and well managed, and there's no like damage, like, because it's complicated with what happened to the accidents at Chernobyl and Fukushima. Like, they had to take extraordinary measures to seal those up and ensure that radiation wasn't going to further enter the environment. Whereas when a nuclear reactor is decommissioned in like the United States and Canada, when they're done with it, like time frame can take anywhere from a few years to as much as a decade. And cost is always questionable as well, depending on the complexity of the project. But they can return these things completely to greenfield and turn them into parks and facilities that no one would even recognize as having been a nuclear reactor at any point in time. It's actually much easier to decommission a nuclear power plant than it is like some of the large coal plants that have like radioactive coal ash and a lot of other like mercury and arsenic contaminants in their byproducts that they release from those sorts of facilities. So like nuclear fuel and anything waste related to nuclear reactors is like very well managed. It's kept in shielded containers on site, and Canada's plan for the long-term storage is to develop a deep geological repository where we can place the spent fuel into basically a large cavern underground, kept in like clay and cement, but also keep it in such a way that it's accessible for use potentially in the future, because we are developing technologies where we are capable of reusing certain types of fuel as fuel for other reactors. Like some reactors, like Russia has the fast breeder reactor, and France and Japan also have similar technology where they can actually reprocess the fuel from their larger reactor fleet in this one other reactor that then basically just continues breeding it into fuel itself. And it can perpetuate its own reaction and keep it the chain reaction sustained. And ultimately, it consumes the vast majority of the nucleides that are harmful and reduces them to a safer state as the final end product that comes out of these types of reactors. So it's a win-win all around. It reduces the footprint of the waste that we're going to have to deal with. We get more power out of it. And it's just going to completely broaden the industry and the capabilities that we have, like handling nuclear fuel and other different like highly radioactive materials.
So you're essentially reusing the spent fuel rods, and from that, I mean, not you know, it's being done in Russia and in France and so forth. They're able to extract more energy from that to generate more electricity. Is that what's being done? The spent fuel rods is able to produce more electricity in certain circumstances, certain environments?
Yeah. Under with the right type of coolant and like moderator types in the core of the reactor, like they can break down the nucleides in different ways. But like the typical fuel rods are like ceramic pellets that get put into nice fancy rods. The fast breeder reactors are typically more like molten salt reactors where the fuel is dissolved in like a slurry of like mixed oxides. So there'll be like uranium oxides, plutonium oxides, and then a few of the other elements sits in a similar area of the periodic table that are also capable of performing fission reactions. And then they will just be in this slurry that just gets exposed to neutrons. And then there's also they have different like control rods to control the rate of the chain reaction like every other reactor. And it just, they allow this reaction to proliferate, and it over time it breaks down those nucleides at a much faster rate. And then if they were just naturally allowed to decay on their own as a product that came out of the initial like first fleet of reactors. So we're planning on doing this for the whole fleet.
That's amazing. I love it. I mean, you're reusing something that had no value in the past, and through that you're able to extract create some energy in one shape or form or another, which is really cool. I'm gonna just pick your brain here. Ontario, do you know if we're heading towards a electricity deficiency in a not too distant future? Because there seems to be the demand is increasing over time. ACs are always blowing in the summertime, but now they're adding all these electric cars that are going to be plugging into the grid, just because seems to be what people want, and politically they're pushing that as well. So that is a huge strain on existing systems here. So with that, do you know if there's going to be deficiency in electricity generation in Ontario?
I think it's going to be tough. I would expect that's one of the reasons why the Ford government is pursuing building a few natural gas plants in the Hamilton area, just to support that kind of load and that demand, because like they're highly flexible and they'll be like an available, dispatchable load resource.
So on demand,
if ever needed. Yeah, like that's one of the benefits of building the natural gas plants, is like they can operate as a spinning reserve, where they, for day to day, they'll stay at a lower capacity than what they're fully capable of, and then when they're called upon, when during periods of extreme demand, they will ramp up to their max capacity, and they can provide like several gigawatts of extra capacity to the grid if need be. So they do provide a great service, but the controversy of building new natural gas plants is that is in direct opposition to the climate goals that everyone professes to want to move towards. So it catches everyone in a catch-22, where we want to reduce the carbon, but we also want to have a reliable energy system. So those two major factors are really tugging against each other in some of these things. Mm-hmm. Like, we should have been building these nuclear reactors a decade ago. Then we wouldn't even be having this problem. But what happened at Fukushima derailed a lot of momentum and progress in the nuclear industry at the time, that was starting to, that had a lot of nuclear projects in proposal, and then things reversed. And then we saw Germany after Fukushima was like, we're doing away with nuclear, and they finally shut down their final nuclear reactors just a few weeks ago. And actually, speaking about that, I read a tweet or just a letter from one of the higher ups. I'm not sure if it was the head of the German Green Party, has actually admitted that he regrets pursuing that path, and that they should be turning those nuclear reactors back on. So that is a very interesting turn of events, and we will see how that plays out in the future. And like I've seen, there's been some Greenpeace people that have turned towards pro-nuclear that were anti-nuclear before. I know of a very vocal pro-nuclear activist that was formerly from that Extinction Rebellion group. The Miss America is a nuclear engineer. One of the most prolific nuclear advocates right now is a Brazilian model that does TikTok videos about like simple little snippets about nuclear factoids. Like, things are really looking up for nuclear right now. Like, we never really had positive activism that was kind of grassroots and happening on its own outside of the industry. Like, the industry typically did its own thing and promoted that, yes, reliable base loads, that's what we bring, and that's what nuclear's been kind of focused on and keeping out of the news as much as possible. If nuclear's doing its job and doing it well, you never hear about it. You only ever seem to hear about nuclear power when something goes wrong, and that has a unique effect on the public consciousness, because the only thing that many people have ever heard about from nuclear power is the times that it's gone wrong, and they could not list off any examples of where nuclear power brings massive benefit to humanity. Like, many people don't even know that tons of medical isotopes that we use and that are generated in nuclear reactors, like right here in Canada, we make many at the Bruce reactor right now. We used to make a lot at the NRU reactor, the research reactor that formerly operated at Canadian Nuclear Laboratories. And it surprises a lot of people how the amount of benefit that nuclear power brings to them. And like, a lot of people don't even know that nuclear power is on their grids. Like, at least like in Ontario, the province does a good job of making sure that people know that there's a lot of nuclear power here. But I spoke to some people while I was in Minnesota, and they had no idea that there are two nuclear reactors like within 2 hours of the city of Minneapolis. It's very interesting that people don't really take an interest in where their power comes from when everything's working.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the threads start to come loose and we start seeing deficiencies and inefficiencies and instability, that's when people really start to pay attention to where their energy comes from. And if they care more about reliability, like, we're going to see a lot more people taking an interest in their power systems, as more and more of the promise of renewables is not coming to fruition as it was envisioned many years ago by the advocates that think that we can do everything with weather dependent power sources. And they seem to have enjoyed a period of very low capital cost that has kind of gone to their head in a way that I don't think they understand how difficult it's going to be to make a lot of their projects sustainable in this new higher interest environment that we found ourselves in. Like, nuclear's basically been relegated to the high cost capital category for a long time. It's controversial, it's high risk, like it's classed with the sin stocks. So things are finally coming around where the cost of capital of nuclear is actually coming down a little bit. So it is getting a little bit more interest from like large scale investment funds and like green energy bonds. So it's, that is very promising, but then that starts a fight with the wind and solar people that see any capital that is being distributed to nuclear power projects is capital that's not being contributed to wind and solar and battery projects. So then it creates this weird animosity amongst people that basically have the same goals. We want reliable, affordable power for everybody that's not going to be emitting like harmful like pollutants. But we're fighting over the money. Like, it feels like such a fiat problem to deal with.
It certainly is. In Canada, we're going to have even more challenging times ahead. Because from what I understand, 2030, federally, we've asked all provinces to mothball their coal plants or to convert them in such a way that it's capturing the carbon. I believe that's what it is. But I remember 2030 is the date that the federal government has imposed on the provinces to take action. And I know Saskatchewan was noting that they're going to have some difficulty moving forward with that. And I'm sure other provinces as well that still have coal operating plants. So with it, that being mothballed or something happening with those coal plants, they're going to have to find some way to generate electricity. People are not going to be happy and sit back and accept brownouts or rolling blackouts or anything along those lines. We've been accustomed to having the energy. You flip the light switch and the lights turn on, or plugging your iPhone into a socket on the wall and it gets charged. We've been accustomed to that, and anything other than that is going to raise a lot of hell. So nuclear is going to have to fill in this void. There's no way that solar and wind can do so. Just, it doesn't have the ability without some massive scaling out. But even then, there's going to be periods of time where it's not windy, it's not sunny, and then it so forth. It's a real mess. But going back to Ontario, how can we incorporate Bitcoin mining in this project in the Bruce power plant that they're building? Because there's a lot of energy that's going to be provided over there, and I'm sure that it's not going to be all utilized at the same time. We're probably still going to sell some of it to New York and to Quebec at a loss. Can we get Bitcoin mining involved here as a way to load balance the whole energy generation thing?
That is my hope. That's the long-term game plan to what I'm up to here. Like, I'm pretty realistic that the seeds that I'm planting probably won't start bearing much fruit for like 5 to 10 years, especially like here, where that's roughly the timeline for the SMRs to start demonstrating and that new large build at Bruce to come operational. Like, I don't expect that to be anything substantial until like early 30s. And that would be a fantastic idea. The benefit of Bruce County, like, it's definitely might have some changeover by the time we get there, but their current MP, Ben Lobb, is himself interested in Bitcoin and how Bitcoin mining can serve the industry, because he has the nuclear reactors in his backyard. He understands the value proposition of Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, so it would make sense that he would be the kind of person that can get behind this sort of idea. Regardless of whether he can retain that seat for the next few elections or not. But we'll see how that goes. Politics in Canada is a very strange arena. At least that one positive thing is that it seems like the two leading parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives, are pro-nuclear, and they're trying to out-nuclear each other in various ways with, like, the federal government will show interest, and then Ontario Conservatives will come out and say we're building a fleet of new reactors and we're just going to go ahead with it even without the federal support for big reactors, because they've been showing support for small reactors. So it's very like everyone's just kind of making moves and seeing who's going to move with them, and there's a lot of industrial supply chain to ensure we get lined up for a lot of these projects, because Canada, although we are good at building the CANDU reactors, like if we're building other types of reactors, there's a whole different workforce and supply chain that's going to go with something like that. So it's going to be a lot of bringing young, talented people towards the industry. So that is where it is hugely beneficial to have these advocates on our side that are kind of bringing that like youthful bright vibrancy. Like I was at the North American Young Generation and Nuclear Conference a few weeks ago, just the week after the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, and that was an amazing crowd of enthusiastic young people that are coming into the nuclear industry that want to see it succeed. Like it was a similar vibe to the Bitcoin conference. It wasn't the same type of conference because Bitcoin conferences are their own unique thing, and nuclear conferences are typically very, very buttoned up and everyone is very, very formal. Whereas like this one, there was definitely a lot of that, but there was just, it felt very festive in a way that like there was a lot of young people enthusiastic about this technology and how it can really benefit the world, and they all see themselves in different roles like driving it forward, and we're going to need a lot more. So that's one thing that these like outreach groups are looking into, is making sure that we're speaking with a lot of like schools that all right down from like the kindergarten to the high school and college level. Like CNL has, like where I work, we have our North American Young Generation and Nuclear chapter goes out to the local schools and does presentations with them, and it is making an effect on like these communities, these teachers. They're seeing the value in the technology a lot more as the outreach kind of matures in a way. So it's a very good time to be in the nuclear industry right now.
Now, have you planted a seed in these young people's mind about Bitcoin? Because it seems like that's a very good opportunity to do so. The environment is right. I mean, I'm looking at what's going on with rising costs and the economy sputtering. So have you had any success, any positive results from orange pilling some of the people, these young people at these conferences?
Oh yeah, I was 100% the Bitcoin guy at that conference. I was unashamed. I was not shy about it in any way. Everybody, within a few hours, basically everybody around the conference knew me. Like that was the Bitcoin guy. And what was awesome was one of the presentations at this conference was by his name is Brad Berryman. He's the chief nuclear officer at the Susquehanna nuclear reactor, which is where Talon Energy is hosting the Terra Wolf. I think it's what, like 46 or 60 or 80 megawatt, that'd be huge. the first like kind of pilot behind the meter nuclear powered Bitcoin mining operation. So he gave a very good presentation on how it all came together, the people that spearheaded it, and how it's doing for the company, their expectations for expansion. And yeah, it was a very good presentation. It was funny because he wasn't too versed on like the more intricate Bitcoin side of things. So he was asked questions about like profitability and volatility, and it's like at 2 cents kilowatt hour, they're just along for the ride. Like halving's coming up, they're just gonna be sitting back, just being like, just watching loads of hash rate just like disappear. And they're just going to be chilling and soaking it all up. So like they're going to provide a very interesting example for the rest of the industry to be like, get on board, because there's going to be a lot more competition, and there's going to be another halving coming up in a few years before like the nuclear industry like really, really starts to get its feet back under it. And then I think we're going to start to see a lot more interest. But the next 4 years are like, building relationships, putting these people together, and getting more people interested in the idea. Like it was very well received at the conference. Everybody that wasn't paying attention to Bitcoin mining with nuclear power if they were present for that presentation and were anywhere within earshot of me going on about my orange pilling escapades, yeah, they definitely are aware of the possibilities of what mining Bitcoin with nuclear power can do for us.
It provides a lot of opportunity, not just to monetize, but also balancing the load of the energy generation. And you mentioned a name, you're talking about TeraWulf, that for people that are looking a little bit more about this, it is a publicly traded company. If you want if you're into fiat gains, the ticker is WULF, I believe, traded on the New York Stock Exchange for those who are, or NASDAQ, I think NASDAQ, for those that are wondering. So that's just an FYI. But with respect to them, are they the only ones that you are aware that are using nuclear power directly to power the Bitcoin mining operations?
They're the only one I'm aware of that is like directly behind the meter, that is taking electricity straight from the reactor before it goes out to the grid. The other large operations that I'm familiar with using nuclear power is one that is being built in the United Arab Emirates, somewhere in Abu Dhabi, near the new set of Baraka reactors that they have just completed. I think they're going to be turning their fourth reactor on within the next two quarters. And then that will be a total of 5.2 gigawatts of nuclear power that the UAE has operational. And they have a sovereign wealth fund that has a collaboration deal with Marathon Digital Holdings to build a 250 megawatt Bitcoin mining data center in conjunction with the nuclear reactor site. So
Marathon's doing that.
Expectations of building it even bigger. Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, was it... Yeah, Anthony Pompliano, he had a really good Bitcoin mining seminar where he basically just interviewed six heads of some of the major mining companies that have done very well throughout the recent market conditions. And Fred Thiel, the CEO of Marathon, wrapped it up and he went on a good explanation of the project that they've got going on in the UAE. And apparently they're getting phone calls from a lot of the UAE's neighbors on how they can use their power infrastructure. And some of those neighbors are also showing an interest in getting nuclear power. So we're going to see some very interesting developments at these crossroads of Bitcoin mining and energy systems coming up in the near future. And it's going to be nation states. It's going to be major power companies. They're going to start hiring, either they're going to buy these publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies for themselves. They'll pick one up and just incorporate it as their own division that just does this associated with all of their power infrastructure. Or they'll hire someone like Harry Sudduck and put them on staff and just be like, here, go build these things. This is what we need. This is where we want to do it. You're the man that builds infrastructure. Go.
Sorry, I lost you there for a sec. Now, you read my mind, because that's exactly what I was thinking, in that it's going to be a matter of time before the people that own and operate these nuclear plants, they're going to do the Bitcoin mining themselves. They're not going to outsource it and have a Marathon Digital come over and to do it, because it will be proven that it's a worthwhile endeavor to do everything within house, and they keep all the profits themselves. When I talk about the profits, I'm talking about the Bitcoin that they mine. So it's going to be a matter of time before this is all done in house, and Bitcoin mining is going to be done directly by the power plants themselves. And nation states or big companies that own these power plants are going to be the ones that are going to be benefiting from all this. So it's definitely going to be an interesting time moving forward. Hopefully we can have the same thing in Canada. I mean, I know you're talking about the MP, Mr. Lobb, in Bruce County, but still, there's going to be a lot of opposition over here. And who knows if they're going to even want to incorporate any Bitcoin mining in Canada directly attached to the power plants, which is an absolute shame, because there is some excess energy we have, at least at this particular moment. And there's going to be even more once the Bruce power plant is operational. So there's going to be a good opportunity to mine Bitcoin. But one thing to look at, too, is the hash rate. I don't know if you've been following this, Ryan, but the hash rate is just up. It's reached a record high in terms of the 7-day average. And somebody's plugging in equipment. It's got to be these people that run these nuclear power plants. What do you think?
There's a lot of players out there doing something on the sly. And I think it's only a matter of time before some of them start coming out bragging about it. But I think everyone's just kind of waiting for the right moment, because like there's a lot of cheap sats on the table and there's a lot of advantages to keeping things on the relative down low for now. Like, I don't think anybody wants to do anything that might spook the price in either direction. So everyone's just kind of keeping their cool. But like, we're hearing things about Bhutan with their like large hydroelectric dam and using that to mine Bitcoin. And like, that would not have even been exposed if it didn't get caught up in the Celsius bankruptcy. So I think that they are just the tip of the iceberg. Like, we know with certainty that the Russians are mining Bitcoin. Like, there's all kinds of Bitcoin going on throughout like the middle, like not quite the Middle East area, like the southern, like or western China area, like Kazakhstan. There's plenty going on in that area. There's little bits popping up here and there throughout Africa. Like, there's some companies working in South America. Like, I think it was like SAS Mining just announced that they're building a large operation in Peru or Ecuador. But there's a lot of hydroelectric power in those countries. So this is going to be a very interesting, highly competitive market to engage in. And a lot of players are going to want to have the full stack of capabilities. So like, there might be an advantage for power companies to be working with a company like Marathon, because Marathon's developing a lot of like proprietary systems to operate their Bitcoin mines. They're very strategic in the way that they're assembling like their infrastructure and their mining operations and what type of facility they want to build and where and sizes and the communities they want to engage with. So it's there's
right in the middle of the speech. Oh, you're back.
No, sorry, I must have a bad connection. But yeah, like they'll want to partner with companies like Marathon because they have like a unique skill set and a unique strategy for how their Bitcoin mining operations are configured. So it's going to be an infinite way that these things can be configured. And I think a lot of different players that are involved in the space are going to try as many ways as they possibly can. Some of them are going to fail, as we saw with the most recent market, where taking on excessive debt when everyone thinks the market's only going up, and then compared to companies that focused on infrastructure and building relationships with communities and then waited for the opportune moments to deploy their capital, seemed to work out a lot better. And different companies have different like hodling strategies. Some will sell their Bitcoin, some will use it as treasury to get collateral, some may even use it, like that's why I wanted to ask your last guest about like the Breeze network and different ways that they can put that Bitcoin to work, and like they'll be able to earn Bitcoin from selling electricity and real be thing. Mining Bitcoin and possibly even have lightning channels that they can profit off of. Like, this is going to get interesting when like you can see the technologies starting to be built and how they can start fitting together, but we're just still in those early stages where we're just waiting for like the killer app to just click it all together. And then we're off to the races and people are going to be a lot more comfortable using Bitcoin. Like, having the largest investment firms showing an interest in it, that also plays in another interesting angle, because if they want to start getting Bitcoin on their balance sheets on behalf of their customers to support these Bitcoin ETFs that they want to fund, like even if they devote a tiny fraction of a percent of the assets under their management to their Bitcoin holdings, like that's going to have huge effects on the value of Bitcoin. And then that'll have reverberations through Bitcoin mining and the sort of energy that's flowing through that system. And then for all we know, somebody at BlackRock or Fidelity or Vanguard is looking like, well, you can earn Bitcoin by mining Bitcoin, so maybe we should invest in these other like large power infrastructure projects. And oh, look, there's all kinds of different companies proposing different nuclear reactors. Like, maybe we can start putting our money towards that and then have just large pools of capital just flowing into both of these industries. I don't think anybody's ready for what's going to happen when these majors like really start to move in and just bring in that credibility behind them. Because that was one thing that actually made it easier to talk about Bitcoin at a nuclear conference, was like the big investment firms are taking this seriously. Like, it's not a crazy taboo subject anymore. Like talking about Bitcoin, it's something that can be done at the grown-ups table now. It was a very interesting change in dynamics, just having that in play behind me. Like, although, like, yeah, you see in the Bitcoin space where many people are kind of like, BlackRock, like, no big deal. Like, it's not going to be real Bitcoin, and you should always be taking your own custody. And we all know these things. And who knows, maybe they're setting everybody up for a big rug pull when people do request their custody and then they say no, and that creates a whole thing. And I don't know. We've seen some crazy shit happen.
So what I would say to you is Vanguard, I think it was Vanguard, it was reported this past week that they own 10% in each Marathon and Riot. So they're putting large pools of money into these Bitcoin mining companies. So maybe not the ETFs per se, they're looking at actually mining Bitcoin, and they're looking at this as an opportunity to increase their balance sheet. And of course they'll sell it in the future. Nobody holds on to a share forever, but I think that they're looking at this as a good opportunity to make some money. So if they are doing it, and not to say that they do everything is correct, and sometimes they make losing bets, but they have the ability to move markets, and they have the ability to change how policy is done moving forward. So with Marathon and Riot, both 10% ownership by Vanguard. Now, who knows if they want to somehow incorporate their businesses into nuclear mining operations in the United States, they might be able to have the political strings to get it done. So it's very bullish if you look at this on a different scale. Like, things have changed quite a bit in the past few years, and it's going to change quite a bit more in the next few years. We're kind of at the tip of the spear here, what's going to happen.
And yeah, cool, because what if they snatch up some TerraWulf and CleanSpark as well and get that on their balance? Like, they have exposure to nuclear Bitcoin mining. TerraWulf behind the meter, and CleanSpark being in Georgia, where most of their grid is nuclear power. So this is a very strange game to be this intimately involved in paying attention at this deep of a level, and just seeing all the different players involved and how all the different moves are being made. Like,
Just like Rand was saying, this energy thing is huge, and it's right, because it creates this bullish narrative behind it. And you know, I don't want to talk too much about fiat gains, but if you look at the price of Bitcoin miners, their stock prices went up considerably in the past month and a half or so. And I think there's just a lot more eyeballs on this moving forward, which is good in many different ways. So, Ryan, it's getting close to the end of this. Just want to, before we close off, is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything that you want that we should have discussed or anything? Because you know what, floor is yours. We could dive into any topic you want, and go ahead. Yeah. You could just.
I'm not even sure what the hell I would talk about. I'm so used to just focusing on this nuclear and Bitcoin mining thing. Like when you were talking about like the coal plants, like, yeah, the only realistic way to replace them is with nuclear power, because the biggest reason is like you have to put the windmills and the solar panels where you get the good wind and the good solar. Like, whereas the coal plant, like, you want to take advantage of the infrastructure that's already there. So that's one of the big reasons that Saskatchewan and Alberta are showing a great interest in the SMRs, and they don't have the grid capacity to justify building one of the giant gigawatt size reactors. So they're very interested in these little 3 megawatt operations that they can kind of spread out and distribute a little bit better and replace.
What's the definition of an SMR? Like, what is the maximum power before it's not considered an SMR?
Typically it's considered anything less than 300 megawatts, but for some reason I'm hearing Rolls Royce has a SMR that's like 400 and something megawatts. So like, it's a flexible definition. Just basically means half as small as the standard reactors that are normally like 700-800 megawatts. And like some of the new ones, that the ones they built in Abu Dhabi, they're 1.4 gigawatts per unit. Like, that's a huge like power generation source.
Wow.
And like, yeah, there's countries like all throughout Europe wants to get on to nuclear, like Poland, Estonia. Like, actually I think it was one of the ministers from Poland was present at the announcement that they had at Darlington that they're expanding the capacity of the GE Hitachi reactor demonstration, because Poland wants to build like 12 of these things. And then Estonia wants to build like 6 of them. And there's...
But west of Poland, who wants, I mean, aside from France, does anybody else operate and want to continue with nuclear plants?
Well, the Nordic countries definitely have, like Sweden and Norway both have nuclear power, and they've actually shown an indication that they're moving away from plans to build windmills and solar farms, like more so like wind farms, because they actually had really good wind resources on like the North Coast. But the law of diminishing returns is like you use up your good space, and then the further afield you have to go, it loses the effectiveness of how much like value you're actually bringing to the table. And it adds more complexity. It requires more transmission. It requires more challenging maintenance and like a lot of different second order factors that don't often get considered by the people that only see free power generation when wind is blowing and sun is shining, which is great. They have their applications like where they fit like really good, like narrow focused, like local production, like you want to have like a good self-sustaining ranch, definitely have a few windmills, have a few solar panels, but like grid scale society level power generation, I don't see a future with windmills and solar panels. I see a future full of these fields full of partially decayed windmills and solar panels that reached a point in their life where that was no longer feasible to maintain them, and there were better options on the table for building more somewhere else, and they just get left and forgotten and become just a part of history, and nature will grow and take over them, and it will be an interesting relic to a really weird time in our history. And like I'm more of the like, yeah, let's just build as much power as we can get our hands on with a technology that we know works reliably. Yes, it can be costly, but like those are factors that can be mitigated by building in a serial fashion where we get very familiar with the technology and we get really good at just building the same type of reactor over and over and over and over again, and have just multiple iterations of that, get multiple countries having their own hubs. Like one of the hubs that we want to build for one of these SMR deployments for export to the rest of the world is at the Beldun port in New Brunswick. That is the chosen site for the ARC Clean Energy's 100 megawatt molten salt reactor. So it's a nice, modest size. They're going to build a set of these reactors on site at Beldun to replace the existing coal plant that's there. And then they're also going to build a mass production facility for this reactor to then export it throughout Canada and the rest of the world. And then they also want to make it into like a large like clean energy hub where they're also going to have hydrogen generation, desalination operations, and they'll have facilities for forming like using that hydrogen and also extracting like oxygen and water and nitrogen out of the air to create higher order chemicals, which typically that takes a lot of heat and a lot of electricity to perform operations like that, which nuclear power is ready and will at the time be available to build, like make a lot of those chemicals. And then we can have large export markets for products like that. And that,
and that's going to be all done in New Brunswick.
Yeah. That's what they want to do at the Beldun port.
My gosh. And you know, just when you think that things are bad and we're bearish on things in Canada, you hear stories like that. And it kind of makes you wonder, shoot, man, you know, things are maybe turning in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
timeline though is like a decade. So that's
right. It's not going to be
but like that's the thing. It's like everyone says, oh, nuclear takes too long. It's like, yes, we should have been building these things a decade ago. Like yeah. If we wouldn't have got caught up in that trap where it's just like, oh, it's too risky, we're not going to invest in it. And then it just kind of died on the vine. And then the wider effect of that was like some of these countries haven't built nuclear power in so long that like they're rebuilding their labor and their supply chains almost from scratch. Like that was one of the reasons that the Vogtle reactor took so long, because it was like felt like shifting sands where they were just every time that they would move forward, there would be several steps back. And it was just a struggle to keep up with just getting it built on time and at a reasonable budget. And like, yeah, then it's so expensive because Like, they put so much money into it. It took over 10 years to build. They haven't generated any electricity with it, but like, interest is accruing on this at a very rapid rate, to the point where they estimate, like, by like the full scope of the project, the interest alone is going to be more than half of the capital cost of the project. Oh. Like it's brutal.
And just then pissing the money away.
And then the wind and solar people, like, they'll give us grief for being like, oh my God, it's too expensive. It's like, you guys is like are paying nothing for your capital. Like, you 1%. Oh my God, you might as well be getting free money.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you get the renewable energy credits and like the production credits. Like, they get credits up the yin yang.
Like, they sure do. That's the way the political winds are blowing, unfortunately.
Nuclear power has been like relegated to investing in firearms and cigarettes. So,
yeah.
We're coming around. We're back. Nuclear's back.
I agree.
Freeway. It's very exciting.
I agree. Now, Ryan, before I pass on the baton to you for signing off and where people could find you or reach out to you if they have any questions, just want to say that you're going to be heading to a Bitcoin meetup in Ottawa. Is that correct? On July 23rd? Am I wrong?
We're going to try to, yeah. I was talking with Boomer. I asked him if he could advance the time to a little bit earlier in the day, because I am still a good 2-hour drive away from Ottawa, and I don't want to be driving home on a night where I have to wake up for work the next morning too late. So, yeah, I'm going to go and check out the Capital Bitcoin meetup with the Boomer hosts and meet some more of the Ottawa crew.
So that's going to be on, if anybody is interested in attending and also potentially meeting Ryan. I know at least the information I have, it's July 23rd, starts at 5, but it looks like it might be a little bit earlier based on Ryan's schedule. And it's going to be at Scores Pizza in the Glebe or Glebe. I don't know how to describe it. That's essentially where it's located. So if you are in the area and you want to check it out, July 23rd, potentially 5 p.m. start, could be earlier depending on a variety of different things. So Ryan, before we sign off, where can people find you or reach out to you in case they want to discuss more about nuclear Bitcoin mining or nuclear in general?
Yeah, thanks, Len. I'm typically found on Twitter, either complaining about wind and solar people or advocating for nuclear Bitcoin mining, obviously. I've used Noster a little bit. I obviously, like everyone else, I'd like to start trying to use it more because it appeals to the Bitcoiner in me. And I'm also on the Orange Pill app. I think it's all Nuclear Bitcoiner. You can easily find me. It'll be a picture of the Hulk. It's an ironic one to choose for, someone that's trying to promote the positives of nuclear power, to choose a superhero that was created by an accident related to gamma radiation. But
could have been Spider-Man, because he was bitten by a radioactive spider, if I recall correctly. At least that's what the cartoon was. I'm not sure about the movies. It's been
We don't get superpowers in real life. It's actually not as exciting. It can be kind of boring. If it's handled properly, it's actually very boring.
It's only not until you plug in a Bitcoin miner, then it gets very exciting.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping to do. Right? That is my next game plan. Let's get them.
And you're printing money. Ryan, thank you. I think this is your second or third time on the show. I can't remember.
Third one, I believe.
Third. So yeah, thank you for coming on, and it's going to be a fourth in a not too distant future. So for everybody out there watching, thanks for watching in and listening. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back on Monday. It will be me and a special co-host, because Joey's going to be away. So with that, everyone, take care.